Good morning. We are continuing our study of this book, Consciousness Transformed, the 1963-64 Hawaii Hotel Talks by Joel S. Goldsmith. And this book was taken from the talks he gave there in Hawaii to the students that were advancing. These talks, as you know, were given just a few months before his passing. And he felt that if the students could assimilate these talks over a certain period of time, I think it's 16 talks, that, well, I'm pretty sure he felt that he could move on. And so he felt that these, as he said, if the students could assimilate these, they could rise to mystical consciousness. And so he felt that these talks must be assimilated. And he uses that word in this chapter we're going to read today several times, along with rising into mystical consciousness. And that's what these talks are all about. Now, after this one today, there shall be five more, and then perhaps we'll have one as a sort of overview or review. We'll see. We'll see what is revealed. But this chapter today is called Our Goal. Should be One Goal, I think. That Mind Which Was Also in Christ Jesus. It was given September 7th of 1963 in Honolulu, Hawaii. And so let's just jump into it. This chapter was sort of a review that Joel was giving. In particular, he is really, really emphasizing the talk he gave on August 24th called Hidden Manna, the real Infinite Way. So listen to what he says. He says, I am asking our teachers and practitioners to give class sessions on these papers, and that's the talks here that he wants every student to assimilate. Something you might want to make note of, something you might want to just look at. When Joel made the 1955 Kailua Studies series of talks, he mentioned that many of the students had been with him for 10 years or more. These talks were made in 1963, and so that's 8 more years. So some of the students that he considered advanced students, which could assimilate these principles in these talks, some of them had been with him 18, 19, 20 years. And indeed, he says it's not easy to do, well, to prepare someone to rise into mystical consciousness. You can't do it quickly. But anyway, he says, I'm asking our teachers and practitioners to give class sessions on these talks. And I'm not that familiar with the different teachers. I know Virginia Stevenson, I know Herb Fitch, I know Tony Titchell, is it? And I know a couple of others. I believe that Lorraine Sinkler gave classes, and a couple of others. But anyway, I don't recall them giving classes on these talks. Very strange. which is one of the reasons why I felt the inner push to do so. So, he says here, whenever I read the paper of August 24th, I cannot really believe it myself, and I read it two or three or four times a day. I am sure that if the message in the paper of August 24th could really be conveyed, our students would be home. And where is home? Is it a place? No, of course not. Home is in mystical consciousness. Home is in the conscious awareness of the living Christ. He says, then, of course, there are also those of August 3rd and September 2nd. They are really beautiful. And he's referring to all these talks. He says, I would not like to see them treated as if they were just papers, because it would deprive the students of the depth of consciousness that is revealed in them. We are going to discontinue our Saturday and Sunday sessions on the last Saturday and Sunday of this month. If we do not do this, neither the papers or the tapes are going to be properly assimilated. You see, you need time. You need time to take these principles into meditation, to take the cones you find here into meditation. You need time to practice and remember the principles. You need time to demonstrate them. And in the demonstrating of these principles, that's where they are assimilated and they become your consciousness. So, he says, there will be students visiting here throughout September, but I have asked them to shorten their stay in order that students may have the months of October, November, and December to assimilate the papers and the tapes. So he's giving them all of October, all of November, and all of December to help assimilate these tapes so that he's not focusing them on something new or different. They can go over and review. They can hear the tapes. They can hear the talks. They can read the letters, the monthly letters, which have these talks. And he's realizing here that it's going to take some time to put them into practice. At least he's giving them 3 months before he makes another talk at the end of these 16 or however many they are. Hang on a minute, I'll tell you. In the front of the book, Virginia Stevenson, who was one of the students there, said, or wrote, Joel wrote to many of us that until we assimilated what was given in the lessons of July 14th through September 30th, he could not take us further into mystical awareness. So that would be, I count 17 talks. You're supposed to take these 17 talks, which we have been reviewing, and you're supposed to practice the principles. You're supposed to assimilate them. And when we complete these talks, which will be either in August or September, the same time he did, then it will be up to each of you individually to assimilate the principles, to make the consciousness that delivered them the consciousness that you rest in and that you live by. So he's giving everyone time to do that. He says, in the spiritual life, you are never able to forget that you are not living your own life. And you have no right whatsoever to consider what you would like to do, or when you would like to do it, or how. No, you do not have this right. In the back of your mind is the reminder, it is God's life being lived, and you are a beholder. You watch God live your life without interposing a wish or a will or a desire of your own. Now, That's what I was referring to when I said I suddenly realized at the ripe old age of 19 or 20 that I was never going to be a normal human being and have that Father Knows Best life. No, my path was different. I was going to have to learn how to live as a beholder, without interposing my ideas, my wishes, my wills, my desires. And he means this. You have no right. On the spiritual path, you give up that right. The right to live your own life is over. And I had to wrestle with that until I swallowed that and assimilated it. Now, I have read and also received students' letters saying, well, I'm leaving everything. I'm going to go teach. And Joel used to become quite adamant, quite firm in his replies. No, you're not. He says here, until such time as the Spirit itself says, leave all for me or leave your nets, no student should ever forget his duty to his family, to his business, to his human interests. Rather, he should make his study and his meditations the foundation for the more harmonious functioning of these facets. It is only to some that the call eventually comes, leave your nets. And when the time does come, it is unmistakable, and it compels obedience. And also, I will add here, it provides for the wayfarer. Remember that poem? The way that provides not for the wayfarer is no way to fare upon. And so when the call comes, if it comes to the few, and you do step out on the water, you step off that cliff, you trust implicitly in the Spirit, and you're ready to assimilate that principle and demonstrate it, that Spirit will provide for your needs. And that's one way that you know it was Spirit and not you, not your little desire to be a teacher. It's just amazing how much the human ego can fool us. And of course the human ego is really world mind. We need to practice, demonstrate, assimilate these principles so that we can discern between the two voices. He says, when the call comes, it does not permit the neglect or desertion of one's family or business obligations. But it should provide for their independent care, so that one may be free for whatever the call may be. Let no infinite way student believe that the call to leave your nets is an excuse to desert or neglect one's duties or obligations. And back to his favorite paper. The paper of August 24th reveals the mistakes that many of our students have made, are making, and will continue to make if they do not awaken. The message of the Infinite Way is imparted only through the fourth dimensional consciousness. Therefore, the teacher must raise up students to the point where they are able to perceive or discern spiritually. Students do not have that capacity as human beings. The message of the Infinite Way did not come through the human mind, nor can it be imparted to the human mind. And I can see or feel Joel when he says before he gives a class, he enters that room in the morning before anybody's there, all the seats are empty, and he has a meditation. And unless something comes, there's no class. In fact, he's even called off classes after the students got there, I'm sorry, and sent everybody home after meditation. But often he received an impartation, and then the class would unfold from there. But that's not coming through his human mind, is it? No, it's coming through spiritual consciousness. It's received. It's God living his life, not him sitting down and thinking, I wonder what kind of class I should give today. What shall we talk about? No, it's not like that at all. It's becoming what he refers to almost a vacuum, listening, waiting upon the Lord. And then there's that inner movement, and with him, often a message. And he would jot down a few notes, and then he was ready. Students would come, fill up the seats, another meditation, and then he would begin talking. And sometimes what was revealed he didn't even know until it came out of his mouth. The talk he gave on love is one such talk. All right, so he considers August 24th, 1963, one of the most important talks he ever gave. And it was called Hidden Manna. I suggest you listen to it again. But we can review a few points not right now. So let's do that. Let me find that. Okay, this is where he begins by saying it's very noticeable to him that many students do not know what makes the infinite way work. They do not know what the infinite way is. He said, if our students knew the answer, the progress would be rapid. But now remember, he's talking to students, some of which have been with him 18, 19, 20 years. That is not rapid. That which started me on the spiritual path was the realization that there is no God in the human world or in the human scene. Eventually it was revealed to me, you cannot reach God through the mind, and that's why prayers aren't answered, because they're uttered through the mind. So, okay, so he says in the chapter we're on today, that mind which was also in Christ Jesus, he says, you must have that fourth dimensional consciousness. You must reveal the infinite way, standing in that consciousness, and those that receive it must be standing in that consciousness. It's the only way it can be given or received, not in the mind. And over here, he talks about, in this August 24th, you cannot reach God through the mind. So he's all about going beyond the mind, isn't he? He's all about ascension up over the mind. And he's hinting at it, and he's poking around at it, and he's pointing at the moon. People are looking at his finger and getting all caught up in the finger, but he's pointing at the moon. Take these principles. Look at the moon. Look within. Listen within. Assimilate them and demonstrate this fourth dimensional consciousness. He says, here you have not reached the goal of the infinite way until you have the actual realized presence of God or the activity of Christ. So, August 24th is all about finding the hidden manna within. It's all about realizing that God's not in the human scene. Yes, it's true, God is omnipresent. And you can walk around saying, God is omnipresent, God is omnipresent, God is omnipresent, and experience severe lack and limitation and even death. The words do not make God omnipresent. You can't make God omnipresent. And no gymnastics in the mind can make God omnipresent. And no right A series of words put in the right order can make God omnipresent. You can't affirm God's omnipresent and make God omnipresent. You can't deny the power of error or illusion and make God omnipresent. God is, but you have no awareness of it working through the mind. You must rise up. And that's what he's trying to get you to assimilate, the principles that will lift you up. You see? So, the hidden manna of the real infinite way is that inner fourth dimensional consciousness. Do you know there is no infinite way out here? Isn't that amazing? When I realized that, I was just astounded. No, these 40 books are not the infinite way. No, the organization in Arizona and now in California is not the infinite way. No, the copyrighted material in Washington, D.C. in the Library of Congress is not the infinite way. No, Joel Goldsmith is not the infinite way. That's why he had to leave. And he says so in this chapter. If I go not away, the Comforter will not come. Here are the principles, my friends. Assimilate these principles. Come up over the mind. You will discover the real infinite way. The hidden infinite way. Your very own Christ consciousness. What is the infinite way? It's the Christ way. It's consciousness way. Living by consciousness, not by mind. And now take these principles and assimilate them. Rise up into mystical consciousness. I am leaving. And that's what he did. So, chapter August 24th, Hidden Manna, The Real Infinite Way. If you want to review that, I highly suggest it. There is an inner grace, and he has tried to lead everybody there. And the amazing thing is that people are still coming to him. Even some of these people that had 18 years are still coming to him. Joel, would you please work for my supply? And he says so in this chapter we're reviewing today. And how disheartening that must be sometimes, to work with someone for 18 years to get them to see. You have the infinite way within you. You do not need me. And then, Joel, will you work for my supply? Anyway, that's what he goes into here. He says, in my mail I often have requests such as this, please work for my supply. And it is based on the belief that supply is out here, and that my work will start it rolling. How does one say that to an individual? I cannot work for your supply because you already have infinity. You thought money was your supply, so you used the word supply as a synonym for money. What you really meant was money. But money is not supply. How does one say that to a person? And I don't know either how you say that to a person. There are people, well, I started this mystical principles list, website, offering, in September will be 10 years, I believe. And some of the people that came then are coming now and still saying the same thing. Will you work for my supply? How do you say that? No! Look, it's been 10 years, buddy! Are you not assimilating these principles? I mean, nobody wants to be rude. But I understand what Joel is saying. How does one say that to a person? We are not dealing with money as supply. We are dealing with consciousness as supply. We are dealing with love as supply, gratitude as supply, benevolence as supply. How then can one work for someone to have them? Now here's the principle. I'm giving it to you. I've given it before. But some of you have not believed me. I think you thought I just wanted donations. But I'm going to give it to you again. If you assimilate it, you will never be without supply. And the principle is this. You must give in order to demonstrate that you have. You cannot demonstrate that you have supply by running around asking someone to work so that it starts flowing to you. The only way I can demonstrate that I have $100, or that I have an automobile, or that I have clothes, the only way I can demonstrate that I have something is to share it. That proves that I have it because I can give it. How did Christ Jesus prove that he had a sufficiency, well, an infinity of supply? He shared it. He poured out. Here, have fish, have bread. No big deal. How do you prove you have supply? You give. I can say that I have these clothes, but I don't really have them until I take the ones I'm not using and give them away. Or even maybe the ones I am using if I feel pushed. I don't mean all of them. That would be kind of stupid. I mean, sometimes you feel led to give away something that you have. I've done that before. Something that you're using. So, I can prove that I have $100 when I give $50 as a donation somewhere, or maybe even all 100 of it. I can prove that I have love, and more than enough love, by giving some to all with whom I come in contact. That's how I prove I have, by giving. If I'm not giving and I'm not sharing even a drop of oil, then I just cannot expect to have. I can ask for help with supply all I want, but I'm not living by the principle, and so I'm not going to demonstrate it. I'm going to demonstrate I have not. I'm clutching this to me, and you can't have it. I barely have enough for myself. And that's a perfect demonstration of I have not. So, your consciousness is your supply. This fourth dimensional consciousness is your hidden manna. You have to learn to live by it. And you only have what you give away. And so if you give out, if you pour out love, you will have love. It will come to you from all over the universe, but it will be you yourself that released it. If you want money, you have to share it. And then it'll come to you in ways that you never dreamed of. It's fabulous how it happens. I think it's amusing. It's great. I like to see how that happens. Comes right out of the universe. Falls right out of the sky sometimes. I had a time in my life when I needed to pay my bills, and God was moving me out of a certain business that I was in. And I knew it was God doing it, so I knew it would be okay. But still, the human mind worries. And eventually I was able to stop and recognize and realize that consciousness is the only supply. Consciousness supplies all that I need. And then I had a letter in the mail within days from some attorney up in Pennsylvania that said I had a long-lost aunt that was leaving me $10,000, and would I like to sign that paper and receive the check? Of course. Of course. And that carried me right over until I entered the next business that God was directing me to. So, don't tell me that supply is something that comes to you. It's not. Supply is that consciousness that you release by going within, finding that hidden manna, and stepping aside and being a beholder. So, the principle is, you must give in order to demonstrate that you have. And he says the purpose of tithing, of giving one's first fruits unto God, was for the benefit of the tither. Whatever you do unto your neighbor, as you would have your neighbor do unto you, you are feeding your own self with charity, benevolence, and brotherly love. So how then could you work for supply for anyone? You cannot say, give away all you have. No, because that is not a teaching. It is a matter of spiritual capacity. All of the things he's discussing, in these papers, in these talks, all of the principles which need to be assimilated are not a teaching. They're not a teaching. It's a matter of spiritual capacity or spiritual consciousness or spiritual discernment. Joel gave away 80% of his income. 80%! He gave some to the university in Hawaii. He gave some to other places. But he gave 80% of his income. Now, I'm not there. I don't give 80% of my income. That's beyond my reach at the moment. But I'd like to be there, and I will be there someday. I believe that Christ Jesus gave 100%. I'm not sure he had any of those fishes and loaves. Remember when he made, when he sat on the well and his disciples said, "Aren't you hungry? You want some meat? I have meat to eat that you know not of." So I'm thinking he gave 100% away. And Joel gave 80% of his income away and lived on 20% and lived quite well. Traveled the world, lived in Hawaii. And I know he liked pies, so he probably ate pretty good too. The point is not that you jump out there and say, "Oh, hey, that's good. I'm going to give 80% of my income," because you probably find yourself in lack and limitation. Why? Doesn't the principle work? Of course the principle works. But you'd still be doing it thinking it was 80% of your income, your supply. And that's the whole point. You've got to get out of having a personal sense of supply. It's consciousness. Now, when consciousness pours out 80%, then you're living life as a beholder, aren't you? It's not you doing it, and you're not taking it out of your personal bank account. It may come out of your bank account, but it's coming out of consciousness. You see, we're transcending all these nitpicky little human traits and fears and possessions and stuff. Right? So Joel gave 80%. I'm not there. I give, and I give what feels correct right now for me. And I give every month. I give every week. I give every day. If nothing more than just sitting down and having a meditation for you guys. That's pouring. That counts. Believe me, the universe blesses me back. So anyway, there's absolutely no way to teach someone to tithe or to love your neighbor as yourself. Think of all the people who are being taught this, and then realize how few are actually applying it. It's not possible to teach a person to love his neighbor as himself. It is not possible to teach a person how to be grateful. It is not possible to teach a person how to give or give up the law of self-preservation, because the human mind cannot respond to these. And here we are back again. It must be something other than the mind. Only a spiritual teacher who has risen to Christ consciousness can awaken Christ consciousness in their patients or students so that there can be a response. And it will not be done to anyone quickly. No, he's speaking to people sitting out in the chairs looking up at him who have been with him for 18, 19, 20 years, some of them. Therefore, he says, only one thing should engage the attention of an Infinite Way student, and that is the developing of his consciousness by any and every possible means. Raising the Christ above humanhood or above the human mind. The need is that every Infinite Way student rise into spiritual consciousness. And remember, the name of this chapter is Our Goal, That Mind Which Was Also in Christ Jesus. I think it should have been One Goal, That Mind Which Was Also in Christ Jesus. Now, he says, one thing should engage the attention of infant waste student. Developing that consciousness by any and every possible means. So, if your attention is still on how can I demonstrate money, how can I demonstrate companionship, how can I demonstrate health, and you're working for those, trying to practice principles to demonstrate those, then you have a little work ahead of you, because you're going to have to come to the place where these students were, and where many of you already are, that you only have one thing engaging your attention: rising into mystical consciousness, assimilating these principles by any and every possible means. Now, down here he says, from the infinite way standpoint, it is always good when you reach the end of your human resources, because you are then either going to die or you are going to live. You're going to die or you're going to rise. If you die, it's not too terrible, because you know you will have another chance. So the extreme in human situations often compels us to find a spiritual solution. Yes, and I'm big on that too. Sometimes you have to get out of the way and allow people their suffering, because that's the only way they will rise. They won't rise if you're doing it for them. All right. Whether the world ever comes to the point of seeking a spiritual solution, I can assure you that there are many more individuals seeking a spiritual solution than we can care for. Selling books is not the answer. The answer is in the attained consciousness of those who can say, "Let me give you help." It might be sad if the world turned to us for spiritual help now and we had to say, "We're so sorry. We know this is the answer, but our students are not ready." How long does it take a student who wants to attain spiritual consciousness? I can give you half the answer. A student cannot even start until his goal is no longer that of meeting his personal problems. The search for God awareness must become the primary motive of study, and then the spiritual student is halfway home. You see? In the 30s, he began to have these spiritual experiences. In the 40s, he began to practice as a practitioner. He had the realization, mind is not power. But in the presence of Christ, as you stand there as a witness, error is dissolved. And so he broke away from Christian Science. He formed his own office as a practitioner, and slowly the principles began to come out and be revealed to him, which would become the basis for living the infinite way. Not for the infinite way, because we know now the infinite way is your infinite consciousness, but for the living of that, the principles that would demonstrate and assimilate that. And in 1947, he wrote some of them down. They became the first book called The Infinite Way. And people began to try to practice them. But remember, the people were coming from different mental sciences. There was a religious science, there was mental science, there was Christian Science, and they were all about practicing principles to demonstrate people, places, and things. I can remember when I was a youth of 12 or 13 years old, walking down the street in my neighborhood, and there was a woman that had a grown-up child, and the child was mentally challenged. We called it mentally retarded in those days. And I remember going by the porch and the lady inviting me in. She did a funny thing. She took me into the bathroom and said, "Look, I want to show you something." And she washed her hands in the sink, and she said, if you do this and you visualize money or gold, I can't remember which, or coins, it will come to you. And so I went home and I practiced that. You see, I was only a child, 12 or 13, but I was practicing these mental science principles. And they were working. Within a few days, I went out in the neighborhood and washed cars and collected pop bottles that people didn't want, used ones. And I made $32 in 1960. Well, when this would have been maybe even the time that Joel was making these talks, or a couple years later. So you see, I was practicing those principles. Obviously, I had practiced them in a former life, because how else would it come to you, your consciousness at 10 or 11 or 12? Anyway, by the time I was 18, I had a copy of The Art of Meditation, so I was advancing right along as a teenager. Other people were interested in playing ball and having girlfriends. And, well, I like girlfriends too, but going to dances and going to movies and all that, and cars and whatnot. I wasn't. I was fascinated with this infinite way. I wanted to know. And so I began practicing the principles. And now it's 42 years later, and I have assimilated quite a bit of them. I know, not because I read it somewhere, I know my own consciousness, which is also your consciousness, I know the one consciousness within is my supply of everything, of companionship, of health, of clothes, of housing, cars, opportunities, yes, even money. I know that touching that inner pool, it forms itself and appears in ways that seem to be miraculous. And I know that in its presence, when its presence is deeply felt, error dissolves. So, the search for God awareness must become the primary motive of study. And then the spiritual student is halfway home. You've got to get to the place where you stop practicing principles to meet your personal problems. Stop trying to use God. Stop practicing mental sciences. And if you don't, that's okay too, because you'll come to the place where they no longer work, and you're ready to rise up higher into mystical consciousness. And that is what he is trying to do with this group of students. It is an interesting thing, he says, for me to watch this work and see some of the students who are beautifully attaining it, and then watch those who still want healings for minor physical claims and are complaining because they have not yet attained heaven. In other words, these students are still living for themselves. Read again the paper of August 24th and see what I mean by all of this, he says. If we could solve all the human problems on Earth right now, a new generation would start tomorrow with the same problems. No, our goal is lifting consciousness into the higher attitude and altitude, and in discovering that there are no earthly problems in that consciousness. You see what we're doing? We're dying. We're dying to the human mind, human life, that needs answers to problems. We're dying out of that whole mentality that practices principles to meet them. We're rising into mystical consciousness where these problems don't exist. But you have to take both sides of that coin. We are rising into the mystical consciousness where human good does not exist either. We are going into the first chapter of Genesis, into that perfect consciousness, and witnessing it forming itself. Yes, it appears to be good, but it's not. It is spirit. So, He says, whether we are dealing with mental ills, physical ills, financial ills, they are not power in the presence of spiritual consciousness. In attaining spiritual consciousness, the harmonies will be revealed. Then you do not have heaven and earth, but heaven on earth. That used to fascinate me. I can remember working in a factory when I first read that. When I first read that Joel said that. Heaven, correctly understood, heaven and earth are one. And I used to think, what is he talking about? But I understand now. Seek not healings, seek spiritual awareness or consciousness. When you have the conscious awareness of spiritual, that fourth dimensional consciousness, then you have the conscious awareness of heaven here and now. And so here is the principle to assimilate, and that is the real infinite way is consciousness within you, and the real heaven is consciousness within you. And when you rest and are resting on a sea of consciousness, when you're resting in heaven, heaven manifests itself. Now, your neighbor may be dying in poverty, lack, limitation, and disease, and loneliness, 50 feet away. But you're living in heaven. It's not the place, you silly. It's the consciousness. It's consciousness. Now, he gives you a couple of clues here. He says, when we make the real contact, the spirit itself, as well as our spirit, have blended and become one. It is as if it were what the world imagines as the second coming of Christ today. When one makes the real contact with the spirit, it is as if there were an invisible spirit out in the world, and anyone who can attune himself to this transcendental eye finds himself under grace. That is what happens when students in difficulty reach out to me for help. I and my Father are one, which is the truth of every one of us. However, as you know, this truth is of no benefit to you until you become consciously aware of it. You see how many times in these chapters that we're supposed to assimilate is he using that word consciously and consciousness? Look, look, people. You can't go around spouting off, I and my Father are one, or affirming it in your mind several times a day. No, you must have that inner conscious awareness of oneness. You must feel that oneness, not think it. You must feel it, and then rest in it. And then when you have the conscious awareness of it, then you benefit by it. But until you have the conscious awareness of it, you may have the words, you may have the thoughts, but unless you have a demonstrable principle, the principle taking form in your experience, then you still have work to do inside, within. The whole world is one with God in all of its sins, diseases, deaths, lacks, and limitations, all of which are removed when there is conscious contact with the Spirit. Since this is the goal of life with me continuously, says Joel, then those who reach out for help have that experience because they have tuned into the Spirit of God. You see? You see? His continuous goal is what? To meet your needs? To work for you? To treat for you? No. He has no idea how to heal, and he frankly admits it. None whatsoever. No, his whole goal, well, he has one goal, to continuously live in the conscious awareness of Spirit. so that those who reach out to him won't be touching him, they'll be touching that consciousness, that conscious awareness of spirit. If they are far enough advanced, they can attune themselves to the spirit of God within at once. But in the meantime, they can attune themselves to Joel and accomplish the same thing, because Joel's not there. The earliest experience of a student is that in which he makes contact with the risen consciousness of the teacher, and he continues to do this until he has made conscious contact with the spirit itself. You see? He is trying to show you, these are the principles, come up higher. Have this thing for yourself. Stop relying on me, I won't be here, and he says that. He says the spiritual path has always been a difficult one. Once an individual has touched the spirit, people believe it's not possible to sin, and that's not true. There was Judas, Lot's wife, Peter, who denied the Master, Jonah. While we are on earth, there never is a time that we are outside the range of temptation, because temptation is subtle. Now, Joel frankly admits that some of his temptations has been corruption in high places. I have told you before that I even failed. Well, I felt like I failed when someone was attacking my wife. And I don't like that. I get very uncomfortable. I want to come to her defense. And in the past, when that happened, I forgot the principles momentarily. It didn't take too long that I felt really uncomfortable from what I was thinking. And I had to come back within and find re-contact that presence within and get back to living by principles. But we all have our temptations. And as long as we're here and we can hear that subtle world mind, then we have temptations. That's what he's saying. Even if he is at the beginning level, the person on the spiritual path should become conscious of the fact that a wrong done by him is not the same as a wrong done by a human being. Once conscious union has been attained by repeated meditations, then when someone reaches out to Jesus or to any one of us, they are touching that which we have touched, and it is that which meets their need, because that has become our consciousness. The attaining of that conscious union is really bringing the Spirit of God to earth. And again, it's all about what is in your consciousness. If you have the conscious awareness of Spirit living itself, and you forget that, and you start listening to this other voice and trying to manipulate things out here, well, it's going to rise up and smack you around a little bit. It's going to get your attention that you've forgotten. Hopefully it won't be to the point where you turn into a pillar of salt, which is poison and absolutely useless. Hopefully you'll see it before then and turn and change. But the point that he's making here is that it's all about what you're consciously aware of. If you're consciously aware of this world and you're working on it even to make it better, then you are working in a false premise. The premise that God is somewhere and there's this world. And so you're going to pay the price. Not because you're being bad or naughty, but because you're practicing two, and you will reap two. However, if you get out of the way and stop practicing anything personally, make this inner contact through repeated meditations, then that consciousness becomes you, or functions as you. You are the witness. You are the beholder, watching consciousness live itself. Then when someone turns to you, they are turning to the infinite way, the infinite consciousness. And, he says, attaining that is really bringing the Spirit of God to earth. If you are consciously aware of a transcendental presence, you have made it so unto you. If you are walking around in ignorance, it might as well not be there. Now, ignorance means unawareness of it. So let's change that sentence. If you are consciously aware of a transcendental presence, you have made it so unto you. If you are walking around in unawareness of a transcendental presence, it might as well not be there. This teaching was brought down to us from the ancients and was revealed by the Master. Thou seest me, thou seest the Father that sent me. You see, that's within reach now of you, isn't it? It's within reach of all of you to demonstrate and assimilate that principle. Thou seest me, thou seest the Father that sent me. When you attain that conscious awareness, that conscious contact within, with the infinite way, the real infinite way, the hidden manna, your infinite consciousness, or all infinite consciousness, then whoever can see that working through you and functioning through you, well, they seeth the Father. Because now the Father and you are one. In his consciousness there was divinity. Christ Jesus, his consciousness was divinity. Every great spiritual teacher has proven the same thing. Yes, they've demonstrated and assimilated the principle. Each one has made contact with the Spirit of God. Yet every responsible teacher has said, if I go not away, the Comforter will not come unto you. I do not mind helping you, but keep on and keep on until you have made your own attunement with it. He says, in the Guru system of India, every student is taught that the mind of the Guru is the teacher. The great teachers of India have acknowledged this to all students. I am your Guru. But this is a temporary relationship. The true Guru is your own consciousness, and it is within you. Spiritual teachers have attained some measure of the Christ consciousness, that mind which was also in Christ Jesus, and the degree of their fruitage usually attests to the degree of their attainment, which is why it says, by their fruits you will know them. See, the conscious awareness of the living Christ, if you really have it, and it's the real contact, it will demonstrate itself as you stand to one side, as the mind is in quiescence, as you rest, as he put it in another book, like a piece of ice floating on the water. You rest, and the water carries you, and it forms itself as your experience. And then there's fruitage. And that attests, here he says, to the degree of your attainment. And finally he says, no responsible teacher should neglect to say, I am willing to be your temporary guru, but if I go not away, the Comforter will not come unto you. Now he's talking to these students, and he's talking 9 months before he passed out of sight. And he's saying to these students that have been with him, 18, 19, 20 years. He says, be prepared. Be prepared, because one day you will have to be under the umbrella of your own consciousness. And so, that is the message which he gave on September 7th, 1963. And it's all about rising into your own consciousness. It's all about, well, from the very beginning of these chapters, of these talks that he said we need to assimilate, it's all about recognizing if so be that the Spirit of God dwell in you, then are ye the sons of God. If so be that you dwell in the secret place of the Most High, then shall these things not come nigh your dwelling place. There is no God in the human scene. None. And anything and everything can happen to the human being, living through the human mind. But when you break out of that shell, when you rise into consciousness and rest there on that sea of spirit, then consciousness lives itself. You have heaven and earth, one. Heaven is earth, your earth. And even though your neighbor may be in hell, and even though you live on the same block, your consciousness is heaven, and you have found it, the real heaven, the real infinite way, the hidden manna, the hidden meat. I have meat you know not of. I have a heaven you know not of, says Joel. I have a consciousness you know not of, and if I go not away, you won't find it. It's 20 years, and you're still relying on me to demonstrate your little supply. Oh, he's telling them, rise up, rise into consciousness. Let consciousness live itself. That's one of the wisdoms. Consciousness lives itself. You don't live it. Wow. We thought in the very beginning we could wash our hands in water and visualize and affirm and deny and we would get rich. Well, at least we would have adequate money to meet our needs. And here we are all these years later and we find out that all of that has to be abandoned. That was one of the classes he gave. Abandon all hope, all ye that enter in. And that's what he was saying. These desires, these wishes, these wants, all these personal prayers, personal please work for my this and my that and my the other, they have to be abandoned. There is no my this, my that, and my the other, and that's what's keeping you chained. The idea that you have a personal life and God somewhere. No, rise up, says Joel. Rise up into mystical consciousness. A new way. A new life, a new world, a new heaven, a new earth, a new Jerusalem, no longer in the mind of earth, but in the consciousness of heaven. And rest in that consciousness and be a beholder, a child, a witness. Behold what the Father has done and is doing. Behold the miracle of grace. Behold, consciousness demonstrates itself. Behold, consciousness is supply, supplying your body, supplying your home, supplying your life, supplying your companionship, supplying your money, income, and outflow. Of course you can't tithe and give away anything. You haven't got it to give. If you do it that way, you'll be giving out of a personal sense, and it will deplete, I guarantee you. Rise up, have no personal anything, and let consciousness give out of its abundance, and you shall see much, much, much more than 12 baskets full left over. You shall see you can feed over 5,000. And still, even if you give away 80%, you will have more than enough. Blessings to you, my friends. It seems that these hours go faster and faster. Thank you for taking the time to listen. Thank you for being receptive so that I have somewhere to pour, so that consciousness through me can pour, and I can witness what miracles the Father does. Thank you.